Mr. Raymond, you are next, and I guess you have been just waiting for this opportunity to respond. Please go ahead.
Before he starts, I just want to say I have to excuse myself at 5 of 12, just so you know. If I walk out in the middle of your remarks, I'm sorry.
Thank you. I appreciate that. I have notes everywhere, many of which I will not even try to get to. I do appreciate the opportunity to be here on behalf of the HIAA, which is the Health Insurance Association of America. We do represent the commercial health insurance companies of the nation. We represent coverage for tens of millions of Americans, and in addition to that, a variety of managed care companies. I come with the credentials not of a genetic testing expert. I come hopefully as someone who knows a little bit about health insurance. And although I have participated in the LC Working Group on Health Insurance and did participate also in the July hearings, which you've heard about before. First of all, HIAA, I would like to just say, strongly supports the guaranteed availability and the renewability provisions that apply to employer-sponsored health insurance. Health plans should not be allowed to deny coverage to employers who want to provide coverage. And once covered, employees should be able to have coverage, and employers should be able to renew those policies, except when there is fraud or misrepresentation or non-payment of premium. All eligible employees should be offered coverage regardless of their health condition, whether it's based upon predisposition to genetic diseases or something else. This provision of whole group coverage requires that employers determine which employees are eligible for health coverage on a basis unrelated to health status or medical claims experiences. And similarly, insurers should not be allowed to exclude otherwise eligible employees or dependents from coverage under a group policy. And I would just like to say that one of the things in parenthetical comment, that over 40 states, including your states of Florida and California, have addressed these issues and have enacted significant legislation at the state level that precludes much of the abuses and the concerns that have been expressed this morning. In fact, many of most of the substantive content of the recommendations that Dr. Collins referred to are not even legal, cannot be done within most of the states with small group employers, and also in individual coverage. We also support the availability of health coverage to every individual, but we know that reforming the market for individually purchased health insurance requires careful balancing between increased accessibility and affordability. And put simply, efforts to make individual insurance more accessible to some may be resultant in making it less affordable to everyone, and this in turn could increase the number of uninsured Americans. I would like to talk for just a few minutes about some of the issues as to why private medical information, including genetic information, is vital to health insurance carriers. Currently, no company we know of is requiring genetic tests for health insurance, nor do we know of a company that is specifically asking for genetic test results. There may be some, we do not know that there are. But companies believe that they should not be denied access to the results of genetic tests. To our knowledge, insurers and insurance departments alike have received few complaints regarding genetic testing.
Mr. Raymond, could I ask you a question?
Surely.
Do you know of any insurance companies that are, in fact, using the information that they should obtain it?
There are companies who have asked. There is often a question if an applicant is medically underwritten. There may be a question, have you had any test? Not any genetic test, but any test within some time frame. If the answer is yes, then there could be an investigation to determine what kind of test that was.
If in the course of receiving medical information for maybe just a routine physical or whatever that the insurance company obtains, do you know of any insurance companies that would use or has used information with respect to genetic information?
There are some who have used it. When they have learned about that information, they have used it, yes.
And was that legal or illegal?
It is legal.
It is legal?
Except in those states where, as Dr. Collins has referred to, where there are about 8 states that now preclude the use of that information.
Okay, so there are 8 states that say you can't, but 42 where you can.
Currently. Okay. Keep in mind that only about 10%.
Okay, I'm just a little bit troubled. I mean, as I listened to the first part of your statement, I got the impression that there was a sense that everybody's in agreement with this. And that's why I asked the question that I did when you got to that point. So we're
maybe I need to underscore, Senator, that I did refer to the fact that for employer-based coverages, that those reforms have been put in place, and we are in agreement with that. There's about 10% of the marketplace that receives coverage through individual policies that can be purchased at will. And for those 10% of the individuals, there is individual underwriting that's taking place.
Ask the question.
Sure. Yeah.
I don't understand why an insurance company should even be able to obtain genetic information.
Companies really don't want it and don't ask for it specifically.
Good, they then get maybe the results. We ought to prevent it from being given out. Yeah. That's well, easy.
You might ask the question, what, how would they react to that?
How would you react to it?
Would you restate the question? No, I would
you
like
you serious?
It. Yes. I mean, if.
Oh, my question is, how would you react to legislation which made it illegal, essentially, for a doctor or anybody to give an insurance company genetic testing information?
Well, we would react, I think, in a couple of ways. First of all, assuming that there were products, that there was legitimacy attached to underwriting, we would believe that there should be access to that information the same as any other personal medical information.
Why?
Because it has a bearing upon evaluation of the risk.
Oh, well, then you do take it into consideration.
But we would also say that that information should only be provided with true informed consent and with authorization on a beforehand basis by the applicant.
Yes, but no one would give their consent. I mean, in their right mind, you wouldn't give your consent. You know your policy will go up or you won't get one.
Senator,
or at some point it'll be canceled.
In response,
you might get one for 10 years and then it would be canceled.
The words of cancellation and losing coverage, I think, are easy to refer to. I think given the real hard world of legal contracts and what people can do, we have enough attorneys in this country that they can keep the courts filled if all of these anecdotal comments and examples could be identified. I think a lot of attorneys could make a lot of money.
Well, let me just say something, because I have met with women who have had breast cancer and had their insurance policies canceled, and their lives are so disrupted by it, they're not about to go to court. I mean, they're trying to continue to live. So, respectfully,
yes,
that annoys me a little bit.
Yes, I respect that, and I'm just simply trying to say that there have been abuses. There have been a lot of corrections, though, also to address those abuses. That doesn't mean that there's still a perfect world of insurance. And I'm sure that both of you are well aware that when we talk about insurance is a very broad term. There are all kinds of entities that provide insurance, some of which are not even subject to the laws and regulations that I have described. In fact, they provide coverage, those kinds of entities, through employers and other arrangements to about half the population of the nation. And I can't address all of those issues. I, in fact, don't even know about all of those kinds of concerns that may exist and take place. But we are making a heck of a lot of progress.
Well, I apologize for interrupting, but we've done that several times this morning just to get our questions in. And so why don't you go ahead with your with your statement.
We believe that the industry has a long and good reputation of addressing and protecting confidentiality. Medical information used in underwriting currently requires authorization and informed consent from the applicant, and the release of the information to attending physicians and other sources is only done with the applicant's written permission. This is required by law. I would like to go to one point. HIA member companies provide a variety of insurance products that are classified by regulation or legislation as health insurance, quote unquote. At the state and federal levels, this includes medical expense insurance, managed care approaches such as HMOs and PPOs, disability income products, and a variety of supplemental and specialized products such as long-term care, Medicare supplement, specified disease, hospital indemnity, dental, vision, and accident only. These are all, quote, health insurance. Unfortunately, many do not understand these statutory or distinctions or regulatory distinctions. And all of these products may share a basic insurance principle, which is the need to evaluate risk and price of products. But there is a need for our understanding when we talk about health insurance that there is an umbrella that is much larger than just the umbrella that takes care of coverage that provides for doctor bills, hospital bills, lab tests, and x-rays. A more accurate term is really medical expense insurance, and in that respect, these which are provided on a group and individual basis, most of the coverage in America is provided through employer-sponsored coverage. And as I indicated, about 10% of the population has individual medical insurance, and this is one of the focal points, obviously, in the debate about genetic issues and privacy, although it's not the singular point. Problems in the individual market are complex.
Mr. Raymond, let me just help us understand why you make a distinction between a group insurance and individual insurance. I mean, I think that the average person listening to this would say, well, if you accept the rules for group insurance related to genetic testing, why not the same rules for individual coverage? I'm sure there's an explanation, but I'd be interested.
Basically, I think, Senator, it comes down to that individual insurance operates in a voluntary marketplace. And in a voluntary marketplace, individuals are free to determine when, under what circumstances they want to acquire coverage, how long they want to keep it. Under an employment situation or group insurance, which is sponsored by an employer, obviously there is a de facto selection process that really takes place. Is this person able to work? And that does help a fair amount in managing the risks that are associated between individual coverages and group insurance. And of course, with employer-based coverage, which is where most Americans get their coverage, there really is hardly any requirement to prove that I am medically insurable. You sign up, you get the coverage, and you keep the coverage as long as you have that employment relationship. But that is not the case, obviously, with individual insurance. It's like life insurance, it's like other forms of insurance, which individuals purchase on a discretionary basis.
Yeah. Okay. I'm not sure that I understand the distinction, but we can pursue that later.
I did want to make that distinction about health insurance as opposed to other forms of health insurance that are available. And I really would like to explain a little bit further about the individual marketplace. It addresses part of what you're getting at, Senator. I think that one of the concerns is when people on an individual basis enter into a voluntary market, they know their own prospects for needing medical services, they know their own health status, and their decisions as to whether or not they purchase coverage is really entirely driven by themselves. And they pay for it out of their own pockets, so therefore they have an economic return and consequence that's attached to it. So this purchase decision is really very much driven by the individual and is likely to be very much driven by their own knowledge of their health conditions.
And usually by their finances as well.
Surely, yes. Because when you're paying for coverage on your own without any employer subsidy, it's expensive. It really is. A couple of points about discussions about possible litigation, not litigation, I'm sorry, about possible legislation regarding this, is that there are good things that can be done if appropriate information is available. And we would just like to point out that, along with some of the other comments earlier, the ability to make early interventions, the ability to develop individual protocols for case management and medical management are very important. And I would just make reference to that if there are considerations about developing legislation along these lines, it should take into consideration that we do not want to have any and all information taken off the table for any and all purposes, because it could have some consequences that would not be could not accrue in a positive light. The primary concern, of course, about personal medical information is centered really about the underwriting and risk selection process. And as I've indicated, most individual medical expense is employer-sponsored, and so does not really involve an evaluation of health status or health history. But carriers who provide disability income, long-term care, supplemental products, et cetera, through individual policies have a legitimate need to underwrite in a voluntary market. And this underwriting process is necessary for an appropriate classification of the risk in a fair manner. One of the concerns about insurers is the possibility of adverse selection, which is where really the individual who is purchasing the coverage has more information than the company that is being asked to provide it. If neither the purchaser nor the carrier know that the individual is likely to develop a genetic disease, adverse selection cannot occur. Adverse selection is really devastating, especially to carriers who write disability income. The claim liability is very long. Disability income is typically sold with inability to raise premiums, as the premiums are guaranteed and non-cancelable as far as the contract. And as a result, there is likely to be, if anti-selection is effective, a one-on-one ratio to claims to the number of applicants. One of our primary concerns as an industry, as we have referenced earlier, is that over time we could say that virtually all diseases and medical conditions have a genetic component. Because of this, the prohibition of disability and other supplemental insurance writers' right to underwrite on the basis of genetic information would be the same as the denying of the right to underwrite on the basis of any medical information, whether it's known or unknown. If this occurs, the disability income market, supplemental insurance market, as we currently know it, would really cease to exist. It would be turned on its head. And we do not believe that there is a need for such a fundamental restructuring at this time. There are other areas that I think administratively could be addressed, which are in the written comments, and I will not try to address because of brevity.
Yeah, again, I might ask you at this point to wrap up, if you will.
We recognize that the discussion of genetic testing is most appropriate. It's an important developing medical tool that holds great promise. It's in its infancy, and we, like the industry of science and the genetic testing community itself, believe that we are just on the fringes. Every newspaper gives a new account. We are reacting, like many others, to these changes. We currently are not using DNA-based tests because the medical community is typically not using these. We do believe that insurers will be at disadvantage, particularly on those products that I've described, if they do not have access to that information in a voluntary marketplace where individuals are purchasing products above and beyond their basic health insurance needs. And that is basically one of our key concerns.
Thank you very much. I appreciate your participation today.